Okay, we're beginning here 11 lines down on the top of Kuf Hei Amud Aleph. Kufa, Amar Rabbi Zeira. We're bringing the memra of Rabbi Zeira that we noted yesterday that had us rework what Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were saying and finally come to the conclusion that Tarvayu, that both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai require both Kinuach and Hadacha. And the truth is that since they require both of them, according to many Rishonim, there's no specific order in which they are to be done because both Kinuach and Hadacha are required, and Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai formulated it, one as Kinuach, one as Hadacha, indicating that there's no real order to them, you just need to do both in order to accomplish the Kinuach and Hadacha that is necessary between the different items that require it. So, Amar Rabbi Zeira, en Kinuach HaPeh Ela Bepat. Then when we say Kinuach HaPeh, we mean that cleaning out the mouth, the requirement to make sure that there's nothing left, the residual in the mouth, requires pat, something that's somewhat abrasive, but also something that doesn't stay behind. So that's why, v'hani milei b'dechite, that's only true if you're using bread that's made of wheat. Aval b'disare, if you use that which is made of barley, lo, that doesn't work, as Rashi says over here, because mishrev shipment parer b'toch hapeh, because it crumbles in the mouth. Ve'enu nichshar yachat, it doesn't stick together when you chew on it, and therefore it's not a cleaning or cleansing agent. It crumbles up and doesn't stick to or grab a hold of residue or residual that is in the mouth. Udechite lami lo amran, and again, bread that is made of wheat, that we only say ele bikrira. That's only true when it's cold. Aval bechamima, if it is warm, mishtar shtare. Rashi says over here, says that it becomes very soft and it sticks and stays inside of the mouth or inside of the palate. So we're trying to find a balance between things that are sticky enough to pick up and cleanse, pull away the residue that's in the mouth or in the teeth. But we also don't want them to be so sticky or so soft that they're going to actually remain in the mouth or stick to the teeth or the palate and remain there. Behani milei birkicha. That's only true if it's really soft. About bakusha, if it is harder, then lo, then it's no good. So again, if you have bread that is cold, that's made out of wheat, the only way it's going to work properly is if it's a softer type of bread. But if it's a very hard bread, you're back to the problem that you had with the sare, with the barley, which is the fact that it's going to crumble. And crumbling is not going to accomplish what we need here, which is to grab the residue that's there, but also then not remain in the mouth. So we're looking for something that's a cleansing sort of agent, and so it has to have properties that are somewhat sticky, not crumbly, and not too sticky, in order to cleanse out the mouth. And the halacha is, b'chol mili havei kinuach. Even though what was mentioned here by Rabbi Zeira was that you should use pot, the truth is you can use anything for the kinuach hapeh. Bar mikimcha, with the exception of flour, tamrei, dates, v'yarko, and vegetables. Because, as Rashi notes over here, rakim hein, they're all very soft. Too soft to the point where they leave residue or residual in the mouth. And therefore, even if they are picking up on what's in the mouth, they themselves are not going to leave the mouth in the end when you swallow it. And therefore, they don't accomplish the kinuach that we are looking for. So here we have the kinuach and hadacha. The Rishonim argue about exactly how to go about doing this kinuach and hadacha. The Haggad Mammonio brings the practice of the Ritzbah that was after he did hadacha, he would then take his finger and put it through his mouth to make sure that everything was cleaned out. And then only afterwards would he do kinuach hapeh bepat. So he first did hadacha and ran his finger through to clear everything out, and then he did kinuach al-yedei hapat. Though the Ri had a practice on the other side of the scale, where he used to dip the bread into wine or into a liquid and do the kinuach and hadacha in one shot, having the bread be soaked in liquid. But others suggest that maybe the best way to go about doing it is to first do the kinuach with the more abrasive item, and then do the hadacha afterwards to wash everything out, and that would be the preferable way to deal with this issue. And more importantly, they actually argue about when is it necessary to do kinuach and hadacha, and that's related to the Balei Tosafot we discussed at the end of yesterday's daf, as well as the discussion we're going to have in a couple of moments about milk and meat, and what is that in relationship to chicken, and maybe even chayot. So all of those will have implications with regard to the necessity for kinuach and hadacha, and the interplay between waiting between different items. Baimine Rav Asi mi Rav Yochanan. Rav Asi asked Rav Yochanan, Kama ishehen ben basar legvina? How long does one have to wait between eating meat and eating milk? Amalei velo klum. He says, you don't have to wait at all. Ini, is that really true? V'hama Rav Chista, don't we have a memra from Rav Chista? Now, even though Rav Chista is an Amora, and he actually happens to be an Amora that's a Talmud of Rav Yochanan, and it quotes him in a number of places, so it really should not be a problem that Rav Chista has a different view than Rav Yochanan, but because Rav Chista's association with Rav Yochanan, we would expect that Rav Chista would be saying something that's akin to what Rav Yochanan had said, and to have an explicit contradiction between Rav Yochanan and Rav Chista seems strange, and that's what's perplexing the Gemara, which is Amar Rav Chista achal basar asur lechol gvina. One eats meat, one may not eat. Gvina may not eat cheese or milk afterwards. Gvina mutar lechol basar. On the other hand, if you ate cheese, you are mutar to eat basar afterwards. So Ella, the question was formulated incorrectly here, which is kama yishev ben gvina le basar. The question of Rav Asi to Rabbi Yochanan was not about waiting after meat and then to eat milk, but rather eating milk and then having to wait to eat basar. V'amalei b'lo klum. And that's where Rabbi Yochanan made his statement that you don't have to wait at all between milk and basar, or really cheese and basar, you don't have to wait at all. And now the Gemara wants to understand that statement of Rav Chista better. It says, Gufa, Rav Chista chal basar, asur lechol gvina. If one eats basar, you can't eat milchiks, you can't eat cheese or milk afterwards. So now Rashi over here says the reason being, Mishum, the basar motzi shuman, because the basar has fats that it leaches, behu nidbak bapeh, and it sticks in the mouth, umarich bitamo, and it leaves a lasting flavor in the mouth. So if one were to eat cheese or milk afterwards, you'd have a quote-unquote mixing of milk and meat in the mouth. Obviously, this is not a sur d'oraita, because we say that it's only derech bishul, asra Torah, and obviously that's not what's happening in the mouth of the individual. This is, of course, a din d'rabbanan, but a din d'rabbanan to prevent against the mixing of milk and meat together, and hereby where you have meat residue in the mouth because of the fats that stay in the flavor that stays in the mouth, therefore we want you to wait until that clears out, or until that is dissipated before you eat milk or cheese afterwards. On the other hand, gvina, mutar lechol basar. If one eats cheese or milk, one can eat basar immediately afterwards. We would assume that it would require kinuach and hadacha in between, but aside from that, there's no requirement of waiting. We will see later in the poskim that they quote the Zohar, which seems to indicate otherwise, as well as other situations in which maybe cheese acts similar to that of basar. Amalei Rav Acha bar Yosef the Rav Chista, basar sheben shinaim mahu. When you have meat that's caught between the teeth, what is the status of that meat that is between the teeth? Is it considered to be basar, and therefore one cannot eat milk when there is meat that's caught between the teeth until you've removed it? Or does it not have any status of basar, and we don't have to worry about it? Kariale, he said to him about that, habasar udenu ben shinehem, that when they're eating the slav in Parshat Balotcha, after they complained about not having that which to eat or meat to eat, it says there that the basar was still between their teeth. So you see there that even when the basar is between the teeth, it is still called basar. Now, that is the second reason brought by many of the Rishonim as to why one has to wait after eating meat before they eat milk, because the basar that gets caught between the teeth doesn't get removed or doesn't loosen up until a certain period of time afterwards. So here we have two reasons why one would have to wait after eating basar. One is the residue fats and the flavor in the mouth of the individual. And the other is the possibility that there's basar caught between the teeth, which is still deemed to be basar. And if one wanted to eat milk or cheese at that time, they'd be mixing the meat and milk together in the mouth of the individual. Now, there are obviously nafkaminot between these two reasons, one of which would be if one clears out their teeth. If one flosses in that situation, would they be able to eat milk afterwards? If you think the problem is the meat that's caught between the teeth, then obviously that would be permissible. If you think the problem is the flavor and the fats in the mouth, then that would not solve your problem. And again, if the issue is fats or taste or flavor that's left in the mouth, if one were to technically do kinuach v'hadacha or some other mechanism for cleansing out one's mouth, then maybe over there you could get rid of that problem even without having to wait the requisite amount of time. Whereas ben shinihem, you'd have to wait because you have to wait enough time for that basar to be digested or lose its flavor in the mouth, or for those pieces to loosen up between the teeth. And again, the tzad chumra, there'd also be an afkamino, which is, if you believe that the basar between the teeth is still deemed to be basar, that means that even if you waited a requisite amount of time, if the meat was still between the teeth, you may have to remove it in order to eat milk or have cheese, because it's still stuck ben shnehem. whereas the flavor, we assume, disappears over that period of time. So there are nafkaminot between them, although we're choshesh for both reasons. In general, when it comes to the weighting between meat and milk, and again, we're going to discuss all the machlokot arishonim with regards to this once we finish off this sugi over here. Amar ma'ukva, ana laha milta chalav bar chamra legabi abba. I, with regards to this matter, am vinegar, the son of wine. Basically, what he's describing here is Yiridat HaDorot, which is that his practice was not on par with his father's practice with regards to this. Now, that would seem to indicate that his father's practice was not necessarily halakhically ordained, but rather it was a chumrah that he took on, and he couldn't match that chumrah, and therefore he went to the Ikar Halacha. Or it might be that they were arguing about what the Ikar Halacha is with regards to this matter. To Ilu Abba, my father, Kiava Achil Bisra Haidna, when he ate meat today, Lova Achil Gavina Ad the Machar Kihashto, he would not eat milkiks until the same time on the next day, May 8th, the 8th, or 24 hours. He would wait 24 hours between eating meat and eating milk. Vilo Ano, with regards to me, I don't wait 24 hours. Bahasu Datohu Dolo Achilna, I don't eat in that meal. Ola Suda Achrita Achilna, but in the next meal, I do eat it. So I don't wait the 24-hour period that my father waited. I only wait until the next meal. Tosafot over here makes a statement, L'sudat achrita, L'abesudat od shrigrim l'asot achat shrikharit v'achad arvit. When he's speaking over here, he's not speaking about a normal person's schedule. In their day, they only ate two meals a day. They ate one a breakfast brunch type of meal, and then they ate one meal late afternoon or into the evening, a second meal. So Tosafot says that's not what he's speaking about here, from one sudat to the next sudat. Ella afilu la'altar, even immediately. Im sileka shulchan uberach, if you clear the table and you say birkat hamazon mutar, then you're allowed to go to lo polog rabbanon, because the rabbanon never are differentiating. They don't make this subjective. They say that the shi'ur is a different su'udah. A different su'udah means literally a different su'udah. So I'm telling you, when you eat a new su'udah normally, or it's sometimes this way, sometimes that way, they're just saying it's got to be a new su'udah. And the minimum of a new Suda means that you finished your meal, you benched, and you started a new Suda. Therefore, according to the Bali Tosafot, you don't need to wait any significant amount of time. You just simply need to start a new meal in order to eat milchiks after fleishiks. So the opposing opinion is clearly what Tosafot is discarding, which is that between meal to meal means the standard difference between a meal that one would eat on a given day, and that meal would be in the morning and then in the evening. And the poskim say that that is roughly 6 hours apart. It's based on a number of gemarot and other places that speak about when a Talmud Chacham eats in the daytime in the morning and when he eats in the evening. And given that there's a 6-hour difference, and that's the source for the fact that people wait 6 hours between meat and milk. And again, here we'll go through all the different opinions as to what do you have to do with regards to after eating meat, what do you have to do to wait for milk, and vice versa, when you have milk or cheese, what do you have to do in order to wait for meat. So, Amar Shmuel, regards to this matter, I'm like the vinegar, the son of wine, vis-a-vis my father. Dilo Abba, my father, Havasir Nikse Tre Zimne Bioma. He used to take a tour of all of his properties, look over all of his monetary matters twice a day. Va'ana, and I myself, Lo Siarno Elechada Zimna. I only go and do this once a day. I take a tour of my properties. Shmuel de Tame. And why did Shmuel take a tour of his properties or look over his matters once a day? Damar Shmuel, man desire nikse koyoma. Anybody who takes a tour of all of his properties, looks over all of his monetary matters on a given day, mishkach estira, he will find a coin's worth of money, which the larger estirot were equal to a sela, and the smaller ones that were made out of copper were about an eighth of that value. Basically, you would have found money every day if you look over your properties. Abaye Avesar Nichse Koyoma Vyoma. Abaye himself went through his properties every day, like the advice of Shmuel. Yomachad Pagobari say, one day he bumped into his sharecropper, the dari that he was carrying, Patcha Dofe, a bundle full of branches or wood. In essence, he had cut off of the trees that he was working for Abaye, and he was hauling it home for himself. Amalei Hani Lehecha. So Abaye says to his sharecropper, where are you taking those? Amalei, the Beimar, to your house. I had collected them. I was bringing them to you. Amalei, Kvar Kadamuch Rabbonon. Rabbonon was already wise to your ways, and that's why I take a tour of my property every day to see what's going on. And now I spotted what's really going on with this sharecropper that he's stealing from me, and that he's cutting off branches and taking things for himself when he's supposed to be working for me and doing things for me. And that's the quote-unquote savings or money found that Shmuel was speaking about. Because if you keep your eye on the property, you'll notice when people are cheating and when people are doing the wrong thing in your property, or your workers are doing the wrong thing vis-a-vis your properties. Rav Asi, Rav Yisayer Nechsei Kol Yoma, he used to also take a tour, look over his properties each day. Amar Heiche Ninhu Kohani Starei Demar Shmuel. Where are all these coins? Where's all this found money that Shmuel spoke about every day he went through there? Didn't seem to be that there was anything of significance that he was finding that was saving him money. Yomachad Chazat Sinora Debadka Be'arei. And one day he saw this huge flow of water that had burst onto his property. Shakle the Glime, he took his cloak, Karche, he rolled it up. Otvebi Gavai stuck it in there to block it up. He plugged the hole in the water channel because the water channel had opened up or broken down. Seems like the embankment of the water channel had broken, and therefore the water from the water channel was flooding into his field and was going to ruin all of his produce in the field. And so therefore he takes his cloak and plugs the hole of this water channel. Ramakalo, he screamed out for help. He called for people. Atu Inche, people came along. Sakrua, they dredged out the water channel so that the water level would drop again, thereby saving his field. And now he says about that, Ashkechino Lukule Istare de Marshmuel. Now I finally found all those coins that Marshmuel had been promising all along. Meaning that until this point in time, he hadn't found anything. But suddenly on this one opportunity, he found all those coins. That all those times they'd been checking, he found nothing. And was one time, it happened to be there at a time where it was necessary to look over the property. And by doing that, he then saved himself a tremendous amount of money. And that's what he says. Now I found all those coins of Shmuel. Now, the advice seems to be very simple advice, which is that if you look over your properties every day, if you take care of your matters every day, then you can see when there are deficits, deficiencies, problems arise, and you're able to deal with them. As well as you can see if your workers are doing what they're supposed to be doing, if they are cheating you. And you can stomp out the problem quickly so that it doesn't persist. And by doing so, you save yourself money. You protect yourself from losses. That makes a lot of sense. The only question is, why Shmuel's statement that I am Chaler Bar Chamra, I only went once a day, and my father went twice a day. What was the significance that Shmuel only went once a day and his father went twice a day? Why is it that Shmuel couldn't do it twice a day? Why is it that his father did do it twice a day? What was the difference between them? So the explanations are given by the Balei Musar. Michtav Me'elio makes a suggestion over here that it has to do with the individual's level of Ruchaniyut, which is that a person that's on a higher level of Ruchaniyut can then withstand more pressures from their physical world or exposure to the physical world. The more a person invests and takes time to work with his monetary matters and his worldly matters, the more he's going to think that the results are results of his own handiwork. So a person needs to be on a higher spiritual level in order to deal with that, so they don't come to the conclusion of Kochi Votzem Yadi Asali Et HaChayel Hazeh. And therefore, Shmuel's father, who was on a higher level, was able to go twice a day and still not take credit for his monetary successes or for his worldly matters. Whereas Shmuel, who wasn't on the level of his father, says that for me, I could only go once a day, because if I went more, then I would take more credit or feel like more of it's being done by me, rather than Siyata Dishmaya, which is really the truth of how people are successful in life, meaning that you can work to a certain point. But in the end, it's really the Siyata Dishmaya that gives the same two people who do the same amount of work and same investment different levels of success, because Hashem is watching over them, and Hashem is the determining factor. So therefore, if you have enough Ruchaniyut, then you can go and continue to invest and work on things and still not be caught up in the cycle of Kochav Yotzei Yodi Asali Tachal Zeh. If not, you need to pull back a little bit, you work a little less, so that you don't take credit for all that is done. That's the view of the Michtav Me'elio. On the other hand, the Chafetz Chaim makes the point that it was an allegorical explanation, which is that this is a Cheshbon HaNefesh. Yes, it's given here as a real life scenarios with regards to issues that are of monetary matters, but it's really about Cheshbon HaNefesh, the same way that one does a cheshbon ha gashmi or cheshbon ha mamon, then someone else has to do a cheshbon ha nefesh every day. And so we're speaking allegorically about the cheshbon ha nefesh, and Shmuel's father, who was on a higher level, was able to do that twice a day and do a cheshbon ha nefesh and come up with something and things to fix. Whereas Shmuel, who felt himself on a lower level, was only able to do that once a day. Or the other possibility is that this is an attitudinal issue, and you have to have the right attitude to go about doing this. like we saw before in the Gemara on Daf Tzadi Aleph with regards to Yaakov Avinu, who is Chas Al Mamono, that he was very careful with his money, and the Gemara there says that the tzaddikim are very careful with the gifts that Hashem bestow upon them. And therefore, this is part of the obligation of Avodat Hashem to go out and make sure that the monetary gifts and the successes that Hashem gives you are maintained, and that you don't waste them, you don't squander them away, and that's part of the Avodat Hashem. So someone who is on a higher spiritual level can do more of that and see it as Avodat Hashem. Those that are not on such a high spiritual level will have trouble making that into an Avodat Hashem and see it more as either drudgery or work that brings and therefore they only do it on a limited basis, because even though it's an Avodat Hashem, they don't necessarily have the right attitude. And that's why Shmuel's father was able to do it twice a day, where Shmuel only felt himself capable of doing it once a day. Alright, so now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda Bavin, Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Ashiyan, Mayim Rishonim Mitzvah. Washing one's hand before the meal is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, as Rashi says, Lishma the Divrei Chachamim. It's something that's put in place because of a Takanat Chachamim, because of Srach Truma. And therefore it's a mitzvah to keep the words of the Chachamim. Vachronim Chuvah. On the other hand, the Mayim Achronim that come after the meal are a Chuvah, are an obligation. The Gemara says, Meitevei, Mayim Rishonim, Vachronim Chuvah. We have another Braita that seems to indicate that both Mayim Rishonim and Achronim are obligatory. Emsaim, the washing in the middle of the meal, is only a Rishut. That is something that you can choose to do or not choose to do. That is something that's optional. The Gemara says, Mitzvah, the Gabi Rishut, Chuvah Karila. It all depends on what the contrast is. When you're contrasting Mayim Rishonim to Mayim Achronim, then Mayim Rishonim are differentiated from Mayim Achronim in the sense that one is a mitzvah and one is a chovah. But when you're comparing both of them or contrasting both of them to Mayim Emtzayim, which are optional, then both of them are obligatory. They're obligatory for different reasons. One's obligatory because it's a mitzvah. One's obligatory because we'll see in a second that there's a necessity for the protection of the individual. Gufa, Mayim Rishonim, Achronim, chovah, Emtzayim, Rishut. Rishonim, notlim ben bikli, ben al gabi akarka. When it comes to Mayim Rishonim, whether you wash into a utensil, or whether you wash directly onto the floor, the Mayim from the Mayim Rishonim can fall on the ground or can fall into a kli. Achronim, eno notlim ele bikli. The Mayim Achronim sounds like you can only wash them into a utensil. The Amri law, and we have some who say, eno tlin al gabi karka. They say it not in the positive formulation, but rather in the negative formulation. The first formulation is that you should wash into a kli. The other one says you should not wash onto the ground. My benayu. What's the nafkamina between these two formulations? Ig benayu kinsa. The difference between them is if you have sawdust or you have small twigs that are on the ground, are you allowed to pour the mayim achronim into that area? So the one who says that ain't no lima gabi akarkoa, that you can't wash onto the ground, that's not considered to be the ground. You have something there that's cushioning or capturing the water before it goes into the ground, and therefore it would be permissible. On the other hand, if you need it to go directly into a kli, sawdust, wood chips that are on the ground are not classified as a kli, and you would not accomplish it. So depending on which is the view here, whether you formulate it in the positive, you must have a kli, then this would not be good enough. If, on the other hand, you say you just can't go onto the karka, can't go onto the ground, then having wood chips or sawdust there would be sufficient beneath the mayim achronim. Mayim Rishonim Notlim Ben Bechamim Ben Mitzonei. One is allowed to wash Mayim Rishonim, whether they use hot water or cool water. Achronim Ein Notlim Ela Mitzonei. On the other hand, Mayim Achronim can only be done with cold water. Yivnei Shechamim Mefapein Et Hayadayim. Because they cause the hands to, quote-unquote, bubble up, as Rashi says over here, that they are Mirakech Et Hayadayim. They soften the hands. Umavlin Behem Et Zoma Tzashil. Instead of washing off the hands, it actually opens up the hands, makes them soft and porous, and then it actually keeps whatever's on the hands there, and it's actually absorbed into the hand rather than removed from the hand. Therefore, we want to use cold water to wash it off rather than hot water. Because then, if you use the hot water, they cause this softening and opening of the pores of the hands to the point where it's absorptive, and therefore, it doesn't take away the residue that's on the hands that you're trying to wash off with the mayim achronim. And therefore, it's not successful at doing what the purpose or the intent of the Mayim Achronim is. So Tosafot over here has two fundamental questions, which we'll pose now and try to deal with a little later as we move through the sugya. One of which is that the Gemara in Brachot brings a pasuk It says, Vit Kadishtem, Vitem Kedoshim. And from there, the Gemara darshins both Maim Rishonim and Maim Achronim, which makes it sound like, first of all, there's a source for this, Mido Uraita. That's number one. And number two is, it makes it sound like both Maim Rishonim and Achronim that derive from there are on the same level. And the Balei Tosfot say, Basmachta Baalmahu. That pasuk that's brought in the Gemara Brachot is just a hint at that which is being instituted by the Chachamim, because, as we're going to see in a second, there's totally a different reason for why you have to wash Mayim Achronim, and it has nothing to do with the derivation from the pasuk, and therefore, that can't be the source for Mayim Rishonim and Mayim Achronim. That would also allow us to have a differentiation between the obligation of Mayim Rishonim and the obligation of Mayim Achronim, because they don't derive from the same location, that's just an Asmachta Biyama. The second question, which we'll defer into the Gemara, is why do you have to wash Mayim Achronim? The Balei Tosafot bring one reason over here, and we'll discuss another reason that's going to be brought in the Gemara, and then discuss the Nafka Minot about that, and then the din of Mayim Achronim today. And then the third thing the Balei Tosafot ask is, what is the Nafka Minot between something being a mitzvah and something being a chuvah? Meaning that if you have to do both of them, then they're both obligatory. Why does it matter whether you're a mitzvah or a chuvah? So the Balei Tosafot bring from the Rabbeinu Tam that the nafka mina between them is the inyan milchemet rishut. The Gemara in Eruvin tells us in the Mishnah there that when one goes out to battle, not a milchemet mitzvah, but a milchemet rishut, then over there you are patur from rechitzat yadayim. That's only by mayim rishonim. But mayim achronim you must do. Mayim rishonim, which are a mitzvah, they are deferred by the engagement in milchemet rishut because there's no time and they maybe don't have the resources to watch mayim rishonim. So there where it's a mitzvah, it's suspended during a milchemet rishut, whereas mayim achronim, which are obligatory, one must do even if they're engaged in a milchemet rishut, and that would be a nafkamina between being a mitzvah and a chuvah. The other nafkamina that's brought is by the halachot gedolot. The Bahag says that rishonim, because they are a mitzvah, because of srach truma, they require a brocha before then, and that's why we make the brocha ba'al nitalat yadayim. But the achronim, which are not a mitzvah, they're not a takanat chachamim for a particular purpose, which we need to listen to the chachamim, but rather they're for the benefit of the individual. They are because of, as we're going to see in the Gemara, a number of possible reasons as to why one would need to wash mayim achronim. They don't require a brocha, and therefore the distinction between a mitzvah and a chovah would be the difference as to whether you need to make a brocha, which with a mitzvah you would, as verse a chovah, where there would be no requirement of brocha, which is the case that we make a bracha before Mayim Rishonim. We do not make a bracha before Mayim Achronim. And as an interesting note, what says here, Mikan Kadav Rabbeinu Yehuda, Rabbeinu Yehuda says, based on this, that in the Tosfot in Bamei Madikin, the She'en Levarecha Kriyat Shema Shlifnei Mitato. For the same reason that is being brought here by the Bahag, one should not make a bracha before Kriyat Shema on the Mitah, Asher Kiddishanu Mitzvotav V'tzivanu Likrot Shema, even though that's a mitzvah derabonon to repeat Kriyat Shema at night and say it al mitato, nevertheless one should not make a bracha on it because it's a chovah, number one, an obligation, but an obligation for the protection of the individual. It's to protect them against the dangers of the night and difficulties that come about. And since it's done for the benefit or the purposes of protecting the individual, it'd be the equivalent of a chovah and not a mitzvah, and therefore one would not make a bracha on it. Although if you look here on the side, they bring a note from the Maharam that this whole piece here was not found in the Balei Tosafot, but was actually a note that was on the side and that then got incorporated into the Balei Tosafot. And then the Balei Tosafot asks about the Mayim Emtzayim, washing one's hands in the middle of the meal, which we're going to see in a second might even be between milk and meat or meat and milk. That necessity for washing hands seems to be, again, a mitzvah of Chachamim to wash one's hands in between those items. So why don't we make a bracha for it? The Balei Tosafot in the end say that washing one's hands to permit one to eat, whether it's milchix or fleishix, either way, is only what he calls a hechsher achila, is allowing one to eat. It's not a mitzvah to do it. It's just a preparatory stage, and he brings other examples of that, including nikur chelev umelichat basar, salting one's basar in order to remove the blood. Even though that's a necessity, it's an obligation, it's part of the preparations of the food to make them edible, or possible to eat in a kosher manner. And similarly, removing the fats from the animal is also something that is not a mitzvah per se in removing them. It's a necessity in order to eat. And therefore, so too over here with regards to washing one's hands in the middle of the meal, it's a necessity for one to eat. It's not necessarily a mitzvah, and therefore you wouldn't make a brocha on it. Now the Gemara continues and says, Mayim Rishonim Notlim, Ben Bechamim, Ben Bitzonim. Comes to Mayim Rishonim, you can use hot or cold water. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yanai, Lo Shanu, Elo She'ena Yad Soledet Bo. That's only true if the water isn't so hot that one's hand recoils from the heat of the water. Of a Yad Soledet Ben, but if it's something where the hand recoils from the heat of the water, ain't no Dibahan. You can't wash with them. Rashi says, V'nishtanu mitorat mayim. They're no longer classified as water when they reach that level of heat. Or the more likely explanation would be that nobody's going to pour that water properly on their hands when it's so hot because the hand recoils from it, and therefore they're not going to wash properly using that hot water. And some say this on the latter half of that statement. When it comes to mayim achronim, you only had to wash them in cold water. But in hot water, you can't do it. That's only if they reach the boiling point. If they don't reach that heat of a boiling point, then you can use them in order to wash my machronim. Then you would infer from that that rishonim afal pishe yad soledet behem mutar. Then you would infer from that that the mayim rishonim, you could do it even if yad soledet behem, which would be a surprising outcome from this situation, because then you would have to be able to wash with something that really you would pull your hand away every time you were washing, which wouldn't accomplish the fullest or best washing. But nevertheless, if you formulate the qualification of Yitzchak Bar Yosef on the latter half of that statement by the Mayim Achronim, it would imply by Mayim Rishonim, it would not be an issue. Emsaim Rishut. We said before that Mayim Emsaim, the washing that you do in the middle of the meal, is optional. Rav Nachman, Lo Shanu, Ela Ben Tavshil to Tavshil. That's only true when you're doing it between dish and dish. Avel Ben Tavshil, Ligvina, Chova. On the other hand, if it's between a cooked item and cheese, it's obligatory. So now over here, we introduce another piece of the puzzle that we need for understanding about waiting between milk and meat. Over here, it says that between Tavshil, seems to be between Fleshiks and Milchiks, one has to wash their hands. The Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam over here says, this situation over here, where we say that you have to wash, and it's optional to wash between two different cooked items, is when you have basar and basar, if you have meat or meat, or gvina and gvina, that's where it's optional. Aval ben tabshil shel basar gvina shelefanav chova, it's obligatory. Aval the gvina shel acharav lo kamar. What it's not saying over here is for the gvina afterwards. Didn't we already decide or declare on the previous amud that if you ate meat, you have to wait for milchiks until the new meal? So why should washing your hands do anything over here? So therefore, he reads the Gemara saying, ben tavshil, between a tavshil, the gvina shidlifnekein, from the cheese that you ate before, in order to eat the tavshil, it's an obligation to wash your hands. So from milchiks to fleshiks, you have to wash your hands. But from fleshiks to milchiks, washing your hands isn't going to do anything because you have to wait till the next su'da anyway. And so he is now saying that there's a distinction between fleshiks to milchiks and milchiks to fleshiks. And as we saw in yesterday's daf, the Rabbeinu Tam doesn't agree with that. Rabbeinu Tam believes that there's no difference between milchiks to fleshiks and fleshiks to milchiks. And over here, the Rabbeinu Tam says the same thing. When it says tavshil to gvina, it means tavshil first, gvina afterwards. And it's literally from meat to milk. And so then, the Rabbeinu Tam is faced with a little bit of a difficulty because the Gemara before said that you have to wait, ben su'da to su'da. So the Rabbeinu Tam here makes an important distinction, which is true of the, of course, the Rabbeinu Tam shita, but as the Baal HaTosafot would say in the end, it's a distinction that can be applicable even if you disagree fundamentally with the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. That when it says ben tavshil to tavshil over here, doesn't make sense to say that tavshil means tavshil basar to tavshil basar, or tavshil gvina to tavshil gvina. Why does one have to wash their hands between meat and meat, or milk and milk? There's no reason to have to wash one's hands. Why should there even be an option to do such? And therefore, Ramfesh Rabbeinu Tam, ben tavshil to tavshil heinu tavshil de basar, the tavshil shel gvina. If you have something that is a tavshil that included meat in it, it's a tarovet of meat in it, or a tavshil of gvina that included milk or cheese that was mixed into the item, since the ein habasar vagvina be'ein, since over there the meat or the milk or the cheese are not actually extant, they're in a tarovet, they're in a mixture in this tavshil, the leke ela tam, and there's only flavor of meat and flavor of cheese that is now recognizable in this item, lo hechmiru, they were not so machmir shechuva litol yadav bentayim, that it'll be obligatory to wash your hands between those two items. Veinu ala reshut, that's optional. And again, it makes it sound like from the Rabbeinu Tam, you can go from one to the next without waiting at all. You don't have to wash your hands. You don't have to do anything. Switching from a tavshil that included meat inside of it to a tavshil that included cheese or milk inside of it. As long as the meat and the milk were not extant and not be'en in there, then one can move between them freely with the option of washing or not washing. Aval ben tavshil de basar le gvina. Over here, the example in the Gemara is when you have an item that was cooked with meat in it, and then you want to eat real cheese afterwards, shagvina be'en, there it's a chuvah, it's obligatory to wash one's hands between them. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam is going to make a distinction between what's being discussed in our Gemara versus what was discussed before. Discussed before was real basar and real gvina. So when you have real basar, you need to wait to the next suda in order to have gvina. When you're doing real basar and gvina, according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's a requirement for nitila and kinuach. But if you do both of those, you could go straight from basar to chalav. If you don't do the netilah yadayim and the kinuach, then you have to wait to a sudata acharite. And then, besides that, now we have a different din, which is the din of tavshil. And that means that if you go from a tavshil of basar to a tavshil of gvina or vice versa, you don't have to even do netilah yadayim, that's optional. And you can move back and forth between them without any issue. The only question we have is when you have a tavshil basar, when you're moving over to a gvina, over there, we're going to require a full-fledged netilat yadayim, obligatory netilat yadayim in order to do that. But again, it seems to be that there is a lighter form of requirements when it comes to waiting between tavshil versus real basar and tavshil and real gvina. And that's how the Rabbeinu Tam explains the Gemara over here, referring to tavshil basar before gvina. And that means also that there's no requirement for waiting at all. You could do it in the same seuda, and all you have to do is wash your hands. Not clear here if you require a kinuach and hadacha that the Rabbeinu Tam requires by real basar. Maybe over here he does not require it. He just requires netilat yadayim to clean one's hands. And therefore it's obviously a huge kula of the Rabbeinu Tam. But the distinction he's making is also plausible to help understand or explain why there might be a difference between the din of Rav Nachman over here and that which was said by Rav Chista before. So over here we're speaking about a tavshil. Over there we're speaking about real basar. And that might explain the difference in their opinions. And allow us to say that they're not arguing in this instance. Right, so now we jump back to Maim Achronim, which is Amar Yehuda Brei de Rabbi Chia or de Rav Chia, Mipnei Ma Amru Maim Achronim Chuvah. What's the reason that Maim Achronim are considered to be obligatory? Shemelech Stomit Yesh, Shemesameh Te'enayim. Problem is that we have this type of salt that comes from the Dead Sea, and it's so potent that that type of salt can cause one to go blind and can do significant damage to the eyes. And therefore, we want people to wash their hands so that danger does not arise. Now, there are a number of assumptions over here, and Tosafot already notes them, which is, first of all, that the Chachamim tell us that one should have melach with all their meals, and therefore one would dip their hands into salt at the end of the meals, either in order to accompany that which they're eating or to cleanse the palate or eat at the end of their meals, which means that their hands were going into the salt. The other thing is that we're speaking about an era where there are no utensils being used for eating. So therefore, all eating is done with the fingers or with the hands. And therefore, exposure to salt or the touching of salt would have been done by the hands and not through a utensil or any intermediary. And therefore, there's a danger if the hands get on that salt that that could cause the blinding of the individual. And since we're dealing with a sakana issue, the washing of the hands, Mayim Achronim, is a chuvah, obligatory item. It does not require a bracha, as we saw before, because it's to protect the individual. It's not about a mitzvah. It also means that it's not going to be suspended in a milchem reshut other times because it's a matter of danger, not a matter of mitzvah. And therefore, by danger, we do not suspend items because we're trying to protect the individual. Amar Abaye. And Abaye says, Mishtaka kikurta bikura. It is a very rare thing, Abaye says. You only find a kurta, like one granule in a whole core worth of salt. So it's not something that's very common. It's something that is uncommon, but it's enough of a risk that we want you to wash your hands and make sure that one doesn't get exposed to this. If one, and the way Rashi writes this is kale, means to count, enumerate. One is measuring out salt. What's the din? You don't need to ask. Of course you have to wash your hands in that case. Now, if we go back to the Bali Tosafot at the end of the previous Amud, there the Bali Tosafot speak about what's the real reason for my machronim? They quote the Gemara over here, as well as the Gemara in Brachot with regards to melech stomi. They also quote a Gemara that says that one must wash their hands because they are mizuhamim. They are soiled from the meal and from the touching of the food there. Just like you need washing because a mizuhuam is pasuli avoda. Someone who is not properly washed or cleansed can't come do avoda in the mikdash. So too, yadayim mizuhamot, pasulim the bracha. Someone's hands, which are soiled, are not permitted to make a bracha. So therefore, you have two real reasons over here for my machronim. And those two reasons actually precipitate different views amongst the Rishonim as to whether my machronim still has application today. The Baal HaTosafot say, with regards to both reasons, that they're no longer applicable. First of all, melech stomit, we don't have any melech stomit anymore. Number two is, we don't always use salt in our meals. Given both of those things, it doesn't seem to be an obligation to do my machronim anymore. With regards to the Yadayim Mizuhamot, the Baal HaTosafot say, because in their day, it was an obligation to wash one's hands at the end of the meal, if you didn't wash your hands at the end of the meal, then your Yadayim were Mizuhamot. He says, today, we don't wash our hands at the end of the meal, and even after that, we don't wash our hands. We don't wash our hands, period. We're happy with our hands being Mizuhamot, and therefore, there's no necessity to wash the hands, because it's not considered to be something that would be Posel Bracha, because it's not something that we ever remove. And so for that reason, the Baal HaTosafot say or make their famous comment that Mayim Machronim, or the practice of people not to do Mayim Machronim anymore, is justified by the fact that it's not really relevant to us. Those that disagree with the Baal HaTosafot either disagree with the fact that the washing of hands is solely for the issue of Melech Stomit, but not for other reasons, including Zuhama. But the Zuhama can be not only a physical Zuhama, it could also be a spiritual Zuhama, which is that there's washing Likdusha. In order to prepare oneself, in order to ready oneself for making a bracha or speaking before Hashem, it's appropriate to wash one's hands to do that. Just like we wash our hands for tefillah, so too one needs to wash their hands in order to do bench or do birkat hamazon. And that obligation would persist even through today. It also does raise the possibility that maybe one should make a bracha on mayim machronim. Because yes, when you're doing it for the melech stomit, that's in order to take care of the person, protect them against the danger and obligation. On the other hand, if it's the facilitator for one's ability to bench because you need to wash your hands like dusha, then just like you make a bracha on netilat yadayim according to the Rambam for tefillah, you should make a bracha on netilat yadayim for mayim machronim in that instance as well. The other argument is that it is preparatory for benching, and therefore the need for mayim machronim still exists. Especially, according to many of the Rishonim, in a situation where a person would otherwise wash their hands or their face before, after they leave the meal, then it's only appropriate to do it before one benches. If you're going to do it anyway afterwards, that shows that it's something that you're makpid about. And if you're makpid about it, then you should do it before you bench, because that's only appropriate before you approach Hashem. In addition, there is a distinction brought by the Rishonim with regards to maybe a difference between the one who is leading the benching and has to hold the coats. And that maybe that washing the mayim machronim is in order to clean their hand and cleanse their hands before they touch the koshel bracha. And that it's a necessity for the one who's holding the koshel bracha versus the remaining parties that are just shomea ka'one in hearing the benching, that maybe over there they would not require mayim machronim. So we do have that distinction also brought up about state rishonim. But that does lead to a big split amongst the rishonim as to whether mayim machronim is still obligatory today. The Baal HaTosafot and those that follow the sheet of the Baal HaTosafot say that it's no longer relevant to us, and that's only been more enhanced by the fact that today we eat with utensils and not with our hands. So then the whole idea of Zuhama and Melech Stomit have both gone away, and therefore maybe there's no need for Mayim Machronim at all, versus the other set of Rishonim, which is also then backed up by those that are more tied in a little bit to the Kabbalistic side as well, including the Gra and others who think that it's still obligatory. And that even without melech stomit, there's an obligation to wash mishum kedusha, mishum preparation for doing a bracha, and that the din of mayim machronim is still very relevant to us today. So, Amar Rabbi, Mireisha Vamina. So, Abaye now is going to give a series of misconceptions that he had. He thought that a halacha was for a particular reason, and then he's going to be corrected by his Rebbe, Rabbo, who's going to tell him that this is the real reason for this mitzvah, for this obligation. And that's why it's relevant to our topic, is the first one's dealing with mayim machronim. And then the others are just a similar pattern, but not necessarily connected to our Gemara directly. The reason that one can't wash mayim machronim directly onto the ground is mishum zuama, because it's disgusting. it would become putrid. The liquids that wash off the zuma from the hands would become putrid over there, and it would make it unpleasant for the individual, and therefore it was good advice not to wash onto the floor. So Amali Mar, my master, meaning Rabba Bar Nachmani, who is his Rebbe, Mishum Disharya Ruach Ra Alayu, because when you wash in that way, it precipitates a problem of Ruach Ra. And so only if it goes into a kli, or according to the other view, it goes on to sawdust or wood chips, then the problem of Ruach Ra is avoided. But otherwise, if you do it directly onto the ground, it's a problem of some problematic spiritual side. And therefore, one should not wash directly onto the karka. And now we have a series of these memorot. Why one is not allowed to remove things from the table? When a person goes to drink at the meal, because it might cause choking by the individual. Here the person is about to drink, and then somebody comes to pull something or take away the table that's in front of him, and he's going to want to object to them taking it away, but he's in the middle of drinking, and that's going to cause him to choke when he tries to speak at the time that he is drinking. And that's why it's impermissible to take away those things at that moment. So the Rabbeinu Gershom sees it as less fatal, and more that things are going to spill all over the place, and it's going to cause disruption in the meal, spilling of the drink and the food, and not, like Rashi suggests over here, that it's going to cause choking in the meal. So Amar Limar, once again, my Rebbe, my master, corrected me and said, Mishum dekashi the ruach tzardo. It's not good for a problems of vertigo, or others suggest maybe problems of anxiety or headaches, or in essence another type of ruach ra'ah that impacts on the individual. V'lo amran el deshakil v'lo mahader. That's only true if you take it and you don't bring it back. Of a mishka of hadure late lamba, if you take it and then bring it back, it's fine. V'lo amran el chutz la'arba amot. That's also only if you move it more than 4 amot away from the table or the area where the person's eating. And if it's still within 4 amot to where the person's eating, it's still considered to be his personal space. That's not considered as if you moved it away. Again, it's only something that's necessary for the suda. Does that cause a problem? Something that's not necessary for the meal itself, then there's no issue with regards to it. Marbarashi was even makpid afilo a asita ubuchna on the pestle and mortar that were there of the tavlik to make the spices, midei detzricha de sudata, even though those were not necessarily part of the meal or necessary for the meal, he saw them still at sarche sudata, and he was makbid that nobody took those away from the table while someone was drinking because of this fear of the ruach ra that would be associated with taking away something while an individual was in the middle of drinking. The reason that one sweeps up the crumbs from the floor is mishum nikiruta, cleanliness. It's a good thing to be clean and keep one's house in a proper manner. And I thought originally the reason why people sweep up the crumbs is an issue of cleanliness. Amar leimar mishum dekashe le'aniyuta. It's not just a matter of cleanliness, but it's actually a matter of one's material standing, which is that if one does not clean up the crumbs and does not sweep out the crumbs, it leads to poverty. Because how gavra tavim hadar le Sarah de Anyuta. There was this individual who the ministering angel of poverty was trying to get. He could not actually succeed at making him poor or causing whatever bad thing would be precipitated by him, causing a poverty to come to this individual. He could not have that devolve upon the individual because Zari Anashvara Tuva, because he was very careful about sweeping out the crumbs. Yomachad Karach Rifto. Over there he broke bread. Ivle, top of grass, or an area that was not easy to sweep up. Amar hashta, vadai, nafal biyadai. Finally, he's fallen into my trap. There's no way that he's going to clean up these crumbs over here. And now I'm finally going to be able to get him. Vater da achil, after he finished eating. Aiti moro, he brought a spade. Akrino livle, he went ahead and uprooted all of the grass and everything that was there. And shadino lenaro, and he threw them out into the river. Shame de kamar, they heard a voice coming from the ministering angel of poverty. Vai, the afke au gavra mibete. Whoa, this guy has really thrown me out of his house. I am now exasperated because I have no way to get at this individual. He's so makbid on this issue that I can never get to him. So that is the real reason behind cleaning up the crumbs and sweeping up the crumbs, is to prevent poverty from entering into the house, and not just a matter of cleanliness. I originally thought, Haidaloshati Ofia, the reason that people don't eat the froth that's on top of the drinks, Mishumi Suta, because it's disgusting, it's not proper etiquette, it's not something that's appropriate. Amalimar, once again, my master Rabba said to me, Mishum Kashi, the Karsum. It's problematic for Katar, and Rashi says it is mucus that drips out of the nose, and therefore it's difficult for this. Mishte Kasha the Karsum. One who drinks it is problematic for Karsum. Minpach Bey, if you blow the froth off the top of the drink, Kasha the Reisha, it's problems for headaches. Midachio, if you wipe it off with your hands, Kasha the Anyuta, then it's problematic for poverty. Meaning that no matter what you do here with regards to the froth, it's problematic. If you drink it, if you blow it off, or you move it off with your hand, all of them have negative results. So Maitakante. So then what do? The shake shkuye, you should submerge it in the item. Either you mix it so that it submerges into the item, or you wait until the froth subsides and then drops back into whatever liquid is below it. So now the Gemara explains. The karsam de chamra, for the problems of drinking the froth that's on top of wine, the antidote is shichra, drinking beer. The shichra, the froth on top of the beer, drinking that, which leads to bad things, the antidote to that is maya, drinking water. To maya, le takanta. On the other hand, the froth that's on top of the water, drinking that has no solution. There's no other drink that you could drink that would ward off this problem that is precipitated by eating the froth over the water. Finu damre inche, and this is the common saying, which is batar anyo as le anyuta. The poor get poorer, the rich get richer. Meaning that those that drink wine and beer have a solution to the problem of drinking the froth. So those that are rich that normally drink wine and beer, they have other items they can drink as an antidote to the problem. Those that are poor, who only can drink water, then if they enter into the problem, there's no antidote, and therefore they're left even poorer than they were before. That's what it means, that poverty follows the poor. So now another member from Abaye, Vamar Abaye, Reish Avamino Hadalo Akle Yarka Mikisha Da Asar Gina, Yishud Demefsek Rabat Tanuta. The reason why one should not eat vegetables from a bundle that the gardener is bringing is because it looks like a person is a glutton. It's someone that's so hungry he can't wait, so he's grabbing the vegetables out of the bundle. But rather, one should wait until you unbundle it and then take the item out, rather than grabbing the item out of the bundle of vegetables. Amalei Mar, that's not true. Mishum Dekashi Dekshafim. The real reason is because it exposes one to vulnerabilities of witchcraft or sorcery. They were going in a boat. Amra Luhu, how much unita? There was this matron who asked them, Odvan Behadaihu, let me travel with you, let me go with you. Lo advua. They said no, they didn't want her traveling with them, they didn't want her joining them. Amra Milta, Asarta La Arba. She whispered something, she muttered something, it tied down the boat or caused the boat to be stuck in place. Amra Inhu Milta, they responded and said something. Shariwa, and they released the boat from being captured, being tied up over here. Rashi over here says with regards to Inu Milta, Afen Ayub Bikim Davar, they were also experts at this witchcraft or sorcery. Well, Simlat Silats Ma Miyada Michshon, and they were only doing it to offset or be an antidote to that which she said, and that's why it was permissible to use it over here. He says, V'ika Damre, and there's some that say, Shamru Shema Mifurash, that they said the holy name of God. V'lo Mukha Milta, says there's nothing in the sugi here that really proves that or indicates that that's necessarily true. But it is another option because of obviously the difficulty with the fact that here you have a Moraim using witchcraft or sorcery in order to free themselves of a difficulty. Elim Kain, as Rashi says over here, it was just using it to offset the problem and therefore was permitted in this case. Amra Luhu, Mavid Luhu. So this sorceress says to them, what am I going to do to you? You don't do any of the items that make people vulnerable to witchcraft or sorcery. You do not wipe yourselves after you go to the bathroom with shards of pottery. And you don't kill a louse on your bigadim. And you don't eat vegetables out of vegetables that are bundled by the gardener. So here you see again this corroboration of the fact that this was something that exposes you to vulnerabilities of witchcraft or sorcery. And since these rabbonim were makbid on all these items, this sorceress didn't have any ability to do anything to them or hurt them. V'amar Abaye Meresh Havamina, Haidulo Achle Yarka, Denafalataka. So at first, the reason why people don't eat vegetables that fall onto the table, Mishumi Suta, because it was disgusting. It's something that fell out of one's hand, fell onto the table. and how it was not considered to be proper to eat such a thing. Amar Leimar, once again, my master, my Rebbe said, Mishom the kasha l'reach hapeh. It's actually problematic because it causes bad breath. The reason that you shouldn't send under the gutter is Mishom Shofchim, because people on the roof might be pouring out dirty water, and that dirty water is going to flow from the roof into the gutter, and then you're going to be sitting under the gutter, and all this dirty water is going to fall on you. So even though it's not raining now, and the gutter seems to be empty or dry, nevertheless, don't sit there, because there's a possibility that they'll do some work on the roof, and then the dirty water will be flushed off the roof into the gutters, and it's going to land on you. Amar Leimar, but Rabba corrected me and said, Mishum Dishchiche Mazikin, that's a place that the Mazikim hang out. Because Hanu Shakulai, there were these haulers, Tabudoro Chavita de Chamra. They were hauling barrels or a barrel of wine. Baolit Puche, they wanted to rest for a second. Udvua Tute Marziva, they put it below a gutter. Not that there was anything flowing out of the gutter, and not that it should have been a problem. They put it down to rest over there. Pak'ah, it exploded or it broke. Atu de Kamei de Marba Ravashi. They came then to Ravashi's son, Apek Shipure Shamte. He took out the shofarot, or the trumpets, and he communicated this mazik that did this problem. Atu de Kamei, so this mazik came to speak to Marba Ravashi, Amalei, Amai Avidochi. Why did you do that? Amalei. So the mazik says back to him, Echi Avid, what do you want me to do? Kod Vei Beonai, when they stuck it on my ear. When they put a barrel down when I'm laying down there and it lands right on my ear, what do you want me to do in that case? What are you doing in a place where people normally travel or traffic? You're not allowed to be in that place, and therefore, atu dishanit, you're the one who did what was odd or you did the wrong thing. Yeah, they put it down on your ear, but you didn't belong there. And since you didn't belong there, you're the one responsible for this barrel. Zil shlim, go pay for it. Amalei, hashtanami, likveli mar, zimna vepara. He says, okay, fine, set me a time, give me some time to collect the money that I owe, and I'll come back and pay it. Kavale Zimno, they set a time. Kimat Zimno Yaakev, when the time came, he was delayed, he didn't come back to pay it back. Kiato, finally he did show up. Amalei, my lo atid, bizmanich. Why didn't you come at the time that you promised you were going to make the payment? Amalei, komile, ditsayer v'chotim, v'kayo, umani. Anything that is tied up, sealed, or is counted, or is measured, Leitlan reshuta lemishkam mine. We don't have any permission to take from that or to quote unquote steal from that. Ademishkachinan mide de hefkera. Until we find something that's from hefker, and therefore it took me a long time to find something from hefker, so I could have sufficient funds in order to repay the loss that I caused over here. Gamar abaye mereisha v'amina. I the shori maya mipuma de chatzva. The reason that one has to pour off the top layer of the water in a pitcher is mishum tzivta. Is because of the little wood splinters or other hard things that float to the top of the water. You pour off the top to get rid of them so they're not problematic or dangerous for the individual who's drinking them. So Amar Leimar, once again, Rabba said to me, Mishum de Ika Mayim Haraim. The problem is the quote unquote bad waters, which is Pamim Shishatam Hem Shade, Mizotakanatam. Sometimes the shade drinks from it, and that causes the top layer to be problematic, and that's why you pour it off. Harubar Shida to have a Beira Papa. There was this son of a shade, or meaning a shade, the demon that used to work or service Rav Papa. Azalatuye Mayaminara, he went to bring him water from the river. Yaakev, he was delayed, he tarried in bringing back the water. Kiat Amrulei Amayak, Rav Papa says to him, what took you so long? Why do you delayed in bringing the water? Amlo Adachalfe Mayamaraim. I had to wait until the bad waters, the waters that were used by the shadim, had passed already. Therefore, I had to wait. Adahachi, so then the shade saw Rav Papa, after he brought in the water, pouring off the top layer of the water. Had I known that you did this on a regular basis, I wouldn't have tarried, I wouldn't have delayed. There I was trying to be careful not to bring the water to you that was the Mayim Haraim, because I'm afraid it was going to hurt you. I didn't know that you guys were familiar with the practices of the shadim, and therefore by pouring off the top layer, you got rid of the problem. So then if that was the case, I just would have brought the water right away. I waited until the Mayim Haraim passed and then brought you the water. But again, here you see the reason for pouring off the top layer of the water was because of Mayim Haraim. And Tosfos says over here, the reason the Shade himself didn't tell Rav Papa to do this and pour off the top of the water was he's afraid that if he revealed the secrets of the Shadim, they would get angry at him. Or the reason that he himself didn't do it in order to protect Rav Papa and therefore not have to wait or be delayed was because it only works for the person who's drinking it. They have to pour off the top layer in order to prevent the problem with the Mayim Haraim. Somebody else probably pours it off. It's not going to help. For that reason, he couldn't do it himself. Therefore, he waited for the Mayimarim to pass in order to bring him good water. Had he known that Rav Papa already knew this practice and did this, then he wouldn't have waited, because then it wouldn't have been any problem to bring waters that had the Mayimarim associated with them.